Welcome to Garden Talk, Larry here, Mueller here. I can tell you from experience that picking fresh citrus from a tree in Wisconsin in the winter is or summer is a real treat. And today on Garden Talk, we have a tropical houseplant expert with us who can help you do the same thing. With us, he's in Hawaii right now, Byron Martin. Byron is president and co-owner of Logie's Plants for Home and Garden. It's a Connecticut business that's been in his family since 1892. They carry fruiting, rare, and tropical plants from all over the world. Byron is also an avid beekeeper. He grows pollinator plants to sustain the local bee population, and has a book out along with his partner on growing fruiting plants in your home. And it's great to have him with us today to talk about this. And what tropical plants would you like to learn more about? Are you interested in growing your own figs or maybe your own black pepper? Having problems with a citrus plant? Join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email to talk@wpr.org. Byron Martin, thank you for getting up early to talk with us from Hawaii. What kinds of plants are you resourcing there?
Well, a lot of the plants we grow are tropical, so we're always on the hunt for new material or things that have been bypassed by time in terms of the plants that we grow. Hawaii, as well as South Florida and areas in Southern California are places where a lot of the plants that we grow in the greenhouses grow. So that's one of the reasons we're over here. And we're also in the process of developing a nursery here to support some of the growing that's done in Connecticut.
I imagine, transporting, there got to be lots of rules and regulations relating to that.
We have to create a certified nursery to make sure that there's no soil from the ground getting on the plants, which is pest issues. And for all of us that grow plants in the commercial trade, keeping plants clean of insects and diseases is a priority. So it's just part of the whole organization in terms of production.
And tell us about your family business. You've been around, maybe not you since 1892, but your business certainly has a family business. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it was started in 1892 by my grandfather in the small town of Danielson, Connecticut, that is. And he actually opened a florist shop at that time in a small greenhouse at the present location. And the florist business was what sort of started it. But the plant side of it, the potted plant or container plant side of it, was a sort of a passion of his. And that grew also along with it. In the 1930s, when the second generation had taken on the work, there was this mass collection of tropical or container or what we would call subtropical plants in terms of geraniums and flowering and fragrant plants. We have a citrus plant, a ponderosa lemon, in the greenhouses that was planted in 1900. It's still there today. Those kind of things started taking over, and the business itself, it was, in a small town to try to find enough people to buy these kind of what we would call rare plants. They put out a mailing list, and that was the beginning of our mail order business, which continues today. Particularly, they were plant collectors and passionate about it, as I am myself. And so the collection continued to grow. And over these many years, which is, well over 100 years, there's been a lot of changes. My work has probably focused more on flowering and fragrant plants and the fruiting plants, which, you know, I joined the business late in the process, so I had a chance to see everything that was going on and then put my energies into those things that I found fascinating. And in the world of plants, for those of us that are gardeners, there is never going to be an end to the things that we can find and grow. It's going to take lifetimes to ever get through it all. So it's just an exciting part of life, having always having new plants coming into your possession or to your focus, and then learning how to grow them and getting to know them and so on. And the business today is probably less focused on geraniums and herbs, which my mother was passionate about, and more on fragrant flowering and houseplants, things that grow in windowsills. Now, they did do a lot of houseplant work, because you have to remember that the Victorian age was the time of houseplants, and certainly in the 18 and early 1900s, that was still part of the culture of horticulture, you might say, in terms of what people used. And we still do a great deal with that, plants that will grow on windowsills. And our work here has been, as I mentioned, related to these different areas. You know, we grow orchids, and my family was really big on begonias. And we still do quite a bit with that. I do some breeding with them still, but, you know, other things have come along. I mean, the fruiting plant book that we wrote, which is Edible Houseplants, is a result of this passion to find container plants or fruiting plants, tropical fruiting plants, things that you'd grow in containers in your home that will actually do well and survive in a home environment. And, you know, we've taken it from there.
Yeah, and it's a dandy book. And on in this state and on this program, many years back, I started a lime tree, a bear's lime tree, and my young daughter at the time said, well, we call it Limey. So Limey is well known throughout Wisconsin, and Limey was a very, very productive lime tree. You know, I might have 25 or 30 limes on Limey at any one time. And so there's been a lot of interest, and over time we've gotten a lot of questions about edible citrus, limes, lemons, and so forth. So it's great, and you feature a lot of plants in your book, some like my limey or limes or lemons, but others that we rarely see. And it's possible, according to you, that, I mean, many of these you will be able to grow in your own home.
Yeah, so the restrictions that we have in terms of growing plants in homes, basically the largest one is light. So there are plants that do well or can do well in lower light. I mean, the best example of that is coffee, which is really a great house plant and a great container plant. And you know, shade-grown coffee. So coffees actually can grow on the understory of trees. And so therefore, in a home environment, they can do well in, you know, a lower light, not dark corner like you grow your philodendrons and many of your aroids, but in a lower light situation of an east to west window where they can do quite well and fruit and produce fruit. And the coffee tree is not very large. I mean, in its culture, it can get to be quite a tall tree, but as a container plant, it grows fairly quickly and starts producing fruit at usually 2 or 3 feet in height. So that's a great example of something that has a lot of capabilities, or not necessarily capabilities, but has the structure and the form, and also the you know, the aspect of its growth that fits well into a home. On the other side of that, then you have plants that we know very well as tropicals, which would be like a mango. So can you actually grow a mango in a home and actually get fruit off of it? And the answer is yes. And what we've done is we've searched out clones or varieties or plants that, you know, have sort of been missed in terms of the market that actually can be grown in a container first. That means that something that can be restricted in the fruit system and still grow and produce fruit. And then those that will fit into a space that is, 5 feet and under. So that would be a typical plant that you'd grow in a large window. And there are many plants that can be done like that. And some of them are very obscure. Like, you know, if I told you the Australian beech cherry, like, how many people know what an Australian beech cherry is? But it's a great plant, and it's just never been brought forward so that people can really see what it does. This is Eugenia rimwardiana, and that's just an example. And even, you know, I've had so many people comment, like, you can't grow a mango in a house. Well, yes, you can if you get the right variety. And the right variety is a variety called Pickering, which is not a vertical mango, but it's more of a weeper. And that in a container, which they will fruit in a container, can produce fruit. Now, basically, you're not going to have hundreds of mangoes, but our pot, which is about 14 to 16 inches across, will produce 4 or 5 mangoes a year on that one plant.
Our guest, Byron Martin, president and co-owner of Logie's Plants for Home and Garden. We're talking about his book. It's titled Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants. Well, what I like about your book, and maybe you can explain this further, Byron, is that you've got those varieties that'll work, and you have information on how to successfully grow them.
Right. As I mentioned before, the real key to doing this is light, and whether that's natural light or artificial light, you have to make sure that whatever plant you choose, it has a situation, a light situation that it will thrive in. And, you know, windows, the human eye that senses light in a plant is an entirely different thing. A great example of that is when we take our tropicals in from outdoors and we bring them in into the home. We often, this is particularly with your citrus, like your limey, you'll get a leaf drop. And that is caused by the reduction in light. And even though our eyes pick up that light coming through even that south window, pull back from the window, the plant is actually being exposed to quite a lower light level than it would if it was grown outside. And it doesn't hurt it any. You just have to remember that this is a response, and then the plant stabilizes.
It essentially, like limey, would grow thicker leaves. You know, the leaves basically change. A lot of the leaves fall off, and the new leaves that come in are different looking.
Right, and that's the plants making a bigger leaf, a thicker leaf, to try to capture more of that lower light.
We had Kyle in La Crosse emailed, and sort of in honor of my limey, they purchased the Persian Bear's lime bush. Is there any pruning that needs to be done to keep it healthy? It's done really well until recently when it dropped quite a few of its green leaves, and we now know why that, you know, obviously that happened. Kyle fertilizes with a citrus-specific food monthly and only waters when the top few inches are dry. Got plenty of southwest-facing sun and has a grow light to supplement as well. Well, what about pruning?
Yeah, so that sounds like a great place to grow it. And Kyle, I think you're doing actually a good job. You've got it down. The pruning is something that you just need to do to head the plant back, shape it up. You know, you get a long lead that reaches out. That doesn't want to have fruit on it, and it makes it look kind of asymmetrical, so you chop that off. The pruning on citrus, limes, for going back a step, limes and lemons, grow twice as fast as a edible citrus like a tangerine or an orange or a grapefruit. They have a, they just continue to grow, whereas the other edible citrus or even ornamentals tend to have a seasonal growth and then it stops. So, and then the growth that generally we have flowering on citrus in late winter, early spring, that's the flowering cycle for them. But lemons and limes can do it off cycle and they'll flower even in the summertime. So when you're pruning citrus, you have to remember there's these two differences in terms of the flowering structure or flowering time, and then you do the pruning according to that. So if you prune in winter, like right now going into winter, you're going to probably be cutting a lot of your flowers off. And then to reshape a plant, it doesn't matter if there's flowers out on the end of that long branch that makes it irregular. You just chop that off because you don't want it anyway to have fruit on the end. And you're trying to make that symmetrical structure to it. So basically with citrus, you just do the pruning, usually after flowering, so you've seen where all your fruit's going to set, and then you prune the plant back.
Byron Martin, our guest today, the book that he wrote along with his wife, Laura Lynn, is titled Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and great to have you along today on WPR News for Garden Talk. Always wonderful to have you listening in, and today we talk with Byron Martin, president and co-owner of Logie's Plants for Home and Garden, and co-author of the new book, Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants. Andrea in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Andrea.
Hi there. I just wanted to say when the Logie's catalog arrives, oh my goodness, what an array of temptations for any garden. It is appalling. So thank you very much for sending that out and raising my spirits on a regular basis. I did want to talk and put a word in for figs, because even if you don't have a bright, sunny window in the winter, you can grow figs and have figs during the summertime because you can put them to bed for the winter. Right now, I'm letting my figs that have dropped their leaves, I'm cutting them back a little bit, and then I'm going to put them into a basement, a garage, any place where it's going to stay around 50 degrees or lower, not freezing, dark, cool, water them once a month. And then next summer, figs all over the place. Oh, my goodness.
Andrea, thanks for going. Comment, Byron.
Well, that's the way to do it. Figs do are deciduous, although not so if it's warm, really warm. And they can be, once they've dropped their leaves, obviously they don't need light. And it's about keeping them cool, as you mentioned, but also not freezing them. They can take a little bit of freezing in a container, but you don't want to go down too low on that. And, of course, in Wisconsin, you get some pretty severe winter weather. And then in the springtime, you move them outside when the danger of frost has gone by. Even if they've started to flush some growth and the growth is kind of white and pale, you can put them out and they'll readjust to that. They go back into growth. And then the figs appear for another cycle. So, yeah, figs are great plants for containers. There are other ways of actually wintering them over. There's also the wrapping method, and I'm not sure about the severity of Wisconsin weather, but if you can insulate them some, you can actually keep them outside in an area that is below freezing and just protect them from that severe, severe cold. So figs actually can take freezing. You know, they can go up to zone 8 in terms of the temperature drops. But yes, as container plants, they're great. We actually do just what you do, except we have cold frames that we move our container plants into for the winter. And even though there's light in those cold frames, they drop all their leaves because we hover the temperature just around freezing throughout the winter, of course. In the warmer days, it goes higher than that. And then the key is that once you get that plant container grown and you move it out, you've actually made a jump on the season. And so you reliably get fruit. Whereas if you do grow them in the ground wrapped, there's this problem with enough warmth throughout the summer, that's degree days, to actually bring the fruit to ripening. And here in Connecticut, we're up against, or we're not up against, but we're near the ocean. Our temperatures probably are not as hot as they are in the interior of the country during the summertime. You know, we're talking about really, really hot weather. During the summer, that actually gives the degree days to ripen the fruit. So containers work actually better here in our area than they do planted in the ground in terms of fruit production. Yeah, good idea.
Andrea, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Joe in Madison, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
You can easily sprout an avocado pit.
But you're wondering, will it ever produce? And Joe, I think you've got comments on that in your book.
Yeah. So the problem with it is it takes a very long time for an avocado. Avocados from pits, even in tropical areas, take years before they'll come into fruit. And when we get ourselves in the north, it's going to be years and years and years. And to do it in a container, because they are very vigorous, large growing plants, is really problematic. So what we do is we graft them. And grafting often, most times, speeds up the fruiting cycle, because what you're doing is you're taking a rootstock, that's your seedling, and you're putting a piece of graft tissue, which is a scion, that is already in the cycle of fruiting. So we take these off of mature trees that are in the fruiting, have already begun to fruit, and we graft it onto it, and that shortens the time between the start of the rootstock and the time when an avocado will stop producing fruit. That said, even in containers, avocados that are grafted take quite a few years before they start to fruit. You got to get a fairly big trunk on that container plant before it starts producing fruit. It can take, 5 to 6 years or even more before, and they'll flower, but they don't fruit until they get some real time put in on it. It's a very interesting process to be able to grow from seed plants and in containers and bring them to fruit. And we do that quite frequently here at Logi, especially when we're trialing new plants. One would be example of the Eugenia candoliana, which is the rainforest plum. It's a plant that we brought seed in from about 6 or 7 years ago. And when we planted it, obviously seedling, it took about 3 years before we started getting fruit off of it on those that we kept bumping up into bigger plants. The plants got up to be about 5 feet in height. We held some of those plants back in very small containers, probably 4-inch pots. They didn't grow very much. And they did eventually flower, which is very interesting, and fruit. And we have them in fruit right now. The plants are just going through a fruiting cycle. Mm-hmm. And the plants only got to be about 2 feet tall rather than 5, but it took probably 3 extra years of that restriction on that young seedling before it decided it got old enough to begin fruiting. And that's actually the process, is the plant gets so big that the vascular system gets not necessarily stressed, but expanded to a point where the plant actually decides it's old enough to actually stop producing flower buds. And we see this on many, many plants that, I know there were some stories that some of the old breeders would actually take plants that were seedlings and they'd wrap copper wire around the base of the trunk, sort of like girdling it, to try to reduce the amount of water that's going up, restrict it to make the plant think that it's older. And I guess to some degree it works. I've tried it and haven't been very successful with it, but there's some literature that will actually direct you and put you in that direction to do that. So that's the process. Avocados, basically, it's going to take years.
There you go, Joe. Thank you for calling. Pat in Stoughton, we'll go to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I've had a Meyer lemon plant for probably about, I don't know, 15 years or so. I've been getting about 6 to 12 fruit on it every year, but I've had scale for the last like 6 years, and I've done everything I can think of to get rid of it, and I'm almost ready to give up. I've used neem oil. I put it outside and sprayed it. I clean it by hand like at least once a week. Do you have any advice before I get rid of it? The honeydew stuff is killing me.
Yeah.
Yeah, a scale can be pretty bad, but there's no reason you can't control it. So my question would be, when you use the neem oil, was it pure neem oil that you diluted in water and then emulsified with soap?
I've done both.
So oils work really well on scale. The key is you have to get complete coverage and you have to do repeated sprayings.
So
are you doing that?
I have tried that. I've taken it outside and sprayed it a bunch with the neem oil. I've used straight neem oil on the leaves and, like I said, cleaned it by hand. It just seems resistant to it.
No, so now the question is, are these scales little brown bumps that you see?
Yeah.
I mean, there's many types of scales. So you have what we call the common greenhouse scale.
Okay.
And there's many, many types of scale, by the way. There's probably dozens, if not hundreds of different types of scale that get on plants. So that little brown bump that you see is not a live scale. That's a dead scale. And underneath that bump, if you push that bump off and you look at it with magnification, you'll see either eggs, and lots of them. They're very, very tiny. Or you'll see these live crawlers. And those crawlers move out from underneath that protected shell off onto the leaf. You can't see them. They're tiny. And then they attach themselves. They go through a mating process, but they attach themselves to the leaf somewhere out in a crack or on the bottom, usually on the bottom side of the leaf, and they become what we call soft shell. And that's not really easy to see, but if you look at it, you'll see these little scales that are sitting on the leaf. And then that's soft shell scale, that's the female. She feeds on the plant, producing the honeydew that's such a pain. And then eventually she matures into this brown bump in which she lays her eggs and the cycle begins again. When it's under the brown bump, it's almost impervious to pesticides, whatever you're using. When the scale, those little crawlers come out, and this goes over many, many weeks. It's not a fast process as reproduction is with many insects. When that little crawler goes out onto the leaf, it's very vulnerable. You can probably kill them with soapy water. But it happens over a long period of time, weeks and weeks and even months, those little crawlers come out. And then when they turn into that scale, that soft shell stage, they're also extremely vulnerable, particularly to oils like neem oil or ultrafine horticultural oils. Those are both work very well. But the problem is that somewhere on that plant, after you've gone through the spraying process, there's a brown bump that is not, that is harboring those eggs or crawlers. And then when you stop that spraying process, they reinitiate infection again. So we really don't have problems with scale too much in the greenhouses anymore. But in the older days, before the neem oil came along, and these oils, these ultrafine oils, and the ultrafine oils, by the way, are oils that don't damage plants as bad as the material that you spray on your apple trees when they're dormant. Those things can cause a lot of damage. But these oils are more adaptable to green leaf plants. And we started doing it, but we spray every week, once a week, thoroughly covering the plant with this oil material, and you're going to do that 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. And in between the spraying, you're going to wash the oil off because that buildup can cause damage. And if you do that with neem oil, and by the way, the neem oil wants to go in at 1.5 to 2 tablespoons of oil per gallon with 1 teaspoon to 2 teaspoons of dishwashing detergent. And that detergent is going to emulsify it so it spreads onto the leaf. And if you do that, you will eventually get past that. Now, that said, you've got to make sure you get absolute 100% coverage of the plant. Because if you miss one of those little brown bumps, which they can be anywhere along the stems, that reinfection starts again. But we have, and this is years ago, we successfully, our mother lemon tree, and for all of you that have been to Logies, we have this kumquat tree that's probably 160 years old. And that thing used to be, when I first started working in the business in the early 70s, that used to be like a haven for scale, and we don't have scale on it anymore. It's gone.
Oh. Pat, there you go. You got some a little bit of work ahead of you there, but good luck. Appreciate your call very much. You know, Kat in Green Bay emailed us, speaking of lemons. She has a young lemon tree Kat bought earlier this spring, brought it inside about 3 to 4 weeks ago. It's now in full bloom, which is very exciting and makes their guest room smell great. What can they do to support it over winter? They do need to repot it since it's in its original container, and is now a good time to do that?
The answer is no.
No, he's right.
And the reason for that is we're going into the hardest time for plants. Everywhere, right? Our light level's low, growth is going to stop, even though there's flowers on it, which is a little early. That may be due to some stress on the plant. But what you're trying to do is get that plant between here and February without it being stressed too much. And the biggest issue with growing citrus inside, other than reduced light, and we've already talked about that, is the root disease or keeping a healthy root system. Citrus are very prone to root diseases or root rot. And this is the time of year when the plants are under very low light, the vigor in the plant is down, it's not growing. And if that soil is kept too moist, you want to make sure that if it is kept too moist, then root diseases can become a problem. And you want to make sure that there's a good dry down. I remember one of the callers earlier on had talked about how he took care of his citrus, allowing the soil to dry. So when you repot that, you're going to put it into a mass of wet soil that the roots are not connected to, and that high moisture level can cause damage. So the best thing to do is leave the plant just where it is. It seems to be happy now. Just continue your watering cycle, which is bringing the surface of the soil to dryness or even a little beyond. Thoroughly saturate it. Generally, we don't recommend fertilizing in the wintertime because we're not trying to force growth. We're just trying to maintain. And there's going to be this point in the springtime when all of a sudden it's going to come back to life. The light level is increased. The plant's recognizing that. And now the leaves, and don't forget, the top of the plant is a mirror of the bottom of the plant. That root system is going to start to grow, and that's the time to bump it up into a bigger pot. And I generally recommend clay rather than plastic for growing citrus. And the reason for that is clay gives you a quicker dry down. And yes, you have to water it more, but that's a good thing. So you bump it up into a clay pot, terracotta, not glaze, so the plant can actually breathe and then go forward from there.
Yeah. Oh, excellent advice. Kat, thank you very much for that email. Excuse me. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Byron Martin, our guest, co-owner of and president of Logies Plants for Home and Garden, and his new book is Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants. Here on Garden Talk on WPR News. Taking a look at the new book out there, Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants, with the co-author of the book, Byron Martin, who is president of Logies Plants for Home and Garden. Great to have Byron with us. And again, you can join in. I hope you do. Questions or comments, the number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Vicki in Eau Claire, quite a bit earlier, had wanted to mention a useful science-based website with information about LED grow lights. And the website Vicki recommends is happyleafled.com. Happyleafled.com. Are you familiar with that site, Byron?
I'm not. I really haven't delved too much into the LED light world, although we do use them in the greenhouses to force production or to disrupt day length. But there's a lot of information out there, and that one site certainly probably would be very useful. People often ask us about, you know, artificial light, and the world has changed since LEDs came in. And the other thing that's changed is the cannabis industry, which has brought, you know, horticulture into large warehouses where they actually, you know, are producing a very, very high light plant. And so that's given, in terms of those of us that are indoor gardeners or light gardeners, a lot of information on what we need to do to, you know, really give that outdoor effect indoors. And I also, I often recommend people, if you're trying to use LED lights, go to the cannabis industry, find out what they're doing, and then replicate it.
Okay. Would you tell us, you know, we've sort of gone talked a bit about your book, but tell us again what everything, or what all people are going to find when they get your book, Edible Houseplants.
Well, it's really an information-based book. So what we did was we took our plant collection of container fruiting plants, and then we created the book with photographs and information on how to grow them. So it's not really a book that you might want to sit down and read for a story. It's really just information and what we know about them and what we've done to be successful in growing them. And I mean, I'll say this again, that light is the biggest factor in indoor culture for whatever plant you're growing, including fruiting plants. In that world of fruiting plants, you have to remember that some things actually need to get big before they'll do something. We mentioned avocados. They have to grow to be, we actually keep our container avocados under 5 feet. But that's fairly large for somebody that only has a 3-foot window. But there are plants that would sit in that 3-foot window easily and produce a lot of high-quality fruit. And I did mention before the Australian beach cherry, which is Eugenia rimwardiana, is a wonderful little plant that produces hundreds of little bright red cherries. And there's actually, it's similar to cherries, and it has a big seed inside. And they're very sweet and delicious, but it can stay quite small. Another plant that we grow as a container plant that's fruiting is the Malpighia, which is the acerola berry. And that plant, although it grows into a probably a 10, 12-foot bush if planted in the landscape, can be maintained in pots or containers under 3 feet. So that would fit in the smaller window. And then, of course, we talked a lot about citrus. Citrus are great container plants. And it doesn't even have to be a lemon. I mean, lemons and limes are very productive, as Liney has shown to you. But, you know, citrus, pretty much all citrus can be grown in containers and fruit very well. And, yes, you know, smaller things like a key lime produce tons of fruit, whereas if you grow a grapefruit, you may only get 4 or 5 on a plant. But, you know, it's all relative to the size of the fruit and the plant itself.
And the varieties are quite important.
Oh, yeah, and there's so many citrus. We just started growing pomelo. I don't know how many of your listeners here are familiar with it, but that is actually the source, one of the parents of our common grapefruit. And it's a huge fruit. I mean, if you see them in the supermarkets, they're, you know, they're like the size of a well, a small soccer ball or something like that, you know. I mean, they're huge. And we've grown them over the years, but we got in a variety called Chandler, which we grew it out, we fruited it, and it's really super sweet. That's the other thing is, like, you know, the quality of the fruit grown in a window as opposed in the north as opposed to being grown in a subtropical climate. But the fruit was super sweet, and it has this very thick rind to it. Well, our Chandler Pomelo, which we've grown to just about, well, with the pot on it, it's probably 5 feet. It's almost as a little under my height, has about 6 fruit on it, but they're huge. I mean, they're these great big round balls, and it was a lot of fun growing it. And it turned out to be a great citrus, very vigorous. It has the whole plant is just large. So the leaves are larger, the branches are larger. That's probably going to be, you probably could fruit it, maybe get a few fruit in a 3-foot window, but you're probably going to need more space than that in terms of height to produce it. But citrus are just great plants overall. And once you get that watering cycle down and the light cycle down, and obviously controlling the insects, which if you're isolated, you generally don't see the insects. So in other words, if the plant comes in clean and you don't have a lot of other plants around, that this is an example of scale, you're probably going to be okay. But, you know, if you have infected plants nearby, then obviously bugs can get on. Scale don't travel as fast as like whitefly or spider mite, but they do travel. And so then you just need to make sure, like with all citrus, you get your watering down, you get your light down, and it's pretty much the same culture right through for all of them. And we talk about pruning. That was a great question. And then doing your proper pruning to maintain them.
Jill in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious. I have some raspberry bushes in my backyard, and it's not a huge plot of them, but they were originally from my grandmother's house, and I've had them producing fruit since the spring all the way until September, and I even ate some off of there yesterday. So kind of a strange growing cycle from my understanding of raspberries, and I don't know if it's something that I should try to mitigate because it's going to harm the plant, or if I just celebrate and eat all the raspberries all year long.
Celebrate raspberries all year long. They're a temperate plant. There's everbearing, so they have multiple cycles of fruiting, and you've probably got that one, which I guess it was your grandmother who probably made a good choice on that. So I would just keep doing what you're doing. Are they in containers?
No, they're planted in the ground.
They're in the ground.
Oh, yeah, don't worry about it. So they make their canes. Generally, their canes are made this year for fruiting next year. And so, you know, those old canes that have fruited, you can cut those out next spring and, or in the winter time. And then it goes through that cycle, and the everbearing ones generally flower later in the year. I mean, I think some growers actually prune them back to force that growth because they fruit the first year. That the everbearing one will fruit late in the year, which is probably what you've got. But you're doing the right thing. Just keep doing it.
Thanks, Jill. Chess in Madison, your turn. Hi, Chess.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a loquat tree that I grew from seed 35 years ago, and it's very vigorous, large leaves, about 6 by 6. It has never blossomed, and I'm wondering why. Do you have any suggestions how I can get it to blossom? So we could maybe get a fruit.
Okay, so the question is, do you ever prune it?
I do.
Okay, so the cycle on that is, like our loquats right now, we grow them in containers, we're doing the same thing. Ours are usually grafted, so we get a colonial variety. But loquats obviously will fruit from seed. And certainly they should have done it by now. So my thought is that you're probably pruning your flowers off. So what time of year do you prune?
Well, I only prune when it gets leggy and it's maybe every 2 or 3 years. I put them outside for 4 months in the summer and then put them in a south-facing sunroom for the rest of the year.
Okay. Hmm. So that wouldn't explain it. That wouldn't explain it because you've given them 2 years of growth. Just like usually if you prune back, if you have a fruiting plant and the limbs, flowers, and you chop it back, it's going to go into this vigorous growth that's going to skip a fruiting cycle, which is 1 year. Like our loquats right now are all in bud, so or coming into bud. They do that in the wintertime. This is actually budding season, and they're starting to flower and the fruit setting so that, you know, in the springtime is when, or in our case, late winter is time the time when they will start producing edible fruit. You know, the fruit just starts to ripen. So what? So it's 6 by 6. How big is the container?
It's about 5 gallons, ma'am, maybe 8 gallons.
Okay, that's fine. That's perfect. And do you fertilize it at all?
Not only with coffee grounds.
Okay. But, you know, so the growth cycle right now is stopped. Light level's low. It's going into flower. You can, under warm conditions, you could probably have some growth coming along. But if it's cool, everything stops. And then in the springtime, it's going through its fall. It starts to grow again, like every other plant. I hate to say that it could be nutritional, but it could. And that's just kind of a tricky question because the plant's still growing. So, you know, what's the deal, right? The things that produce, the plant's old enough to flower, so you don't have to worry about that. At that age, the plant should have been flowering for years. The thing that will reduce it is, and this doesn't mean you're not doing it, is light. It's also pruning, but you're letting that go for a couple of years, so you don't have to worry about that. And then there's nutrients. And, you know, we always have told that the high middle number phosphorus produces flowers. So you're not even getting flowers. Forget about the fruit. So we first have to get flowers. The middle number, which is phosphorus, will produce fruit or will produce flowers. And that, to some degree, is true and not. But the fact that you're only giving it coffee grounds means that it's not getting, because coffee grounds are not complete plant nutrition. No. You need to stop feeding it. And it may take a year before you get to the point where it starts to decide it's got enough. So the plant isn't getting something, right? So the first thing it does is just grow and keeps its leaves. The second, the last thing it does is it tries to reproduce, and that's flowering. So my suggestion would be don't prune it as much as you can. If you have to, just to get it into the house, reduce it at all, but don't prune it like shave it. Just take selected leaves off to make it fit. And start fertilizing it with a balanced fertilizer. And you don't need to do it now. It's the wrong time of year. But in the springtime, let's start to grow. And then grow it through the season with that. Remembering that the first number in your fertilizer is nitrogen that produces leaves, and you're doing that fine. Those last two numbers, which are phosphorus and potash, are the ones that help induce flowering. So you want to make sure that you're not overdoing your nitrogen on this fertilizing cycle and increasing those last two numbers and see if it doesn't make a difference. But as I said, it's going to take a year or two before you can get that cycle in sync.
Jess, thank you so much. Byron, thank you so much. We are out of time, but I hope we can do this again. I hope you'll be with us maybe when you're back in Connecticut. His book is Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants. Great show. And we have a great team. Producers Clara Neipert and Joel Padnott, our technical directors Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.